What's up, everybody? We're barking, and it's dark. By the time you're watching this, it's probably dark. You may be listening to this, and it's you're driving to work in the morning. Whatever you're doing, we appreciate you listening to it. And I want to say right off the top, a deeply unserious show. And if you are tuning in for a lot of Georgia football talk, you're probably not going to get a ton, but you probably will get a little tonight because we've got J.D. Pickell, the face of On3 Sports. He's going to be on with us, the guy who is front and center in all sorts of videos and just a relentless hyena when it comes to working at this whole game. But Jake Roos, what's going on with you, buddy?
Not much, man. Just, you know, getting ready to get out here, I guess, and get into camp season, which is hard to believe, man. I know that you guys are getting ready to go back. We got the Corky Kell luncheon coming up next week. It's really just wild that it's all happening and that it's all here. I was talking to my mom yesterday, dude. Can you believe it's almost August? I mean, it's man. Like, it's almost sick. I'm not saying I'm upset by it necessarily ever than the ever quickening passage of time, which is always gets to my brain, you know?
Yeah, it's a little bit bittersweet because I know like every August I get older and that sucks. But
every day you get older, Jake.
Well, yeah, but you know, every August I get to flip the switch on I get to be 40 for 365 days, sure, you know, and I get to be 41 here soon. But the thing about it that you know, obviously work's about to pick up, everything's about to be busy, you're gonna see less of the family and all that stuff with everything going on. But I'm also glad to get college football back. And sure. That's what's going to be fun. It's going to be fun having some ball to watch. And I know one guy, our man J.D. Pickell, is there's no doubt in my mind, dude, that you are ready to see some football pick back up.
It's crazy because it feels like the season just ended, doesn't it? And now we're rolling all the way through it, man. It's awesome. But
I'm in this mindset where like sometimes I'm like, wait, Michigan won last year. That storyline has gotten so pushed to the back, but from Nick Saban and from the NIL discussions and scholarship changes. And like, it's almost insane that even happened. It was like a void. It almost occurred in
the Nick Saban retirement, like jumped us into a whole nother season of college football. Yes. Cause you had the coaching carousel and you had the portal. Like, it was madness, but like, I mean, if that's our business here going forward for the next couple of years, like, I'm all right with that. You know, I'm okay with that kind of activity in the college football world.
That's because you already got light hair. So when you go gray, it ain't going to come through like it will on me and Roe.
I'm ready for it.
I'll tell you what, something happened with that Nick Saban thing too that I think we just all had like 2 months of our life snatched from us in a moment and we didn't really realize it. Like, I mean, it was just – I mean, that seems to have been what's made this offseason maybe go a little faster than most of them.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah, like it's one of those things, and y'all probably could attest to this too. Like once the national title game ends, all of us with our families are like, okay, hey, that's kind of it. Like there's one more signing period, but that should pretty much be it. And I was driving home from, I think it was the coaches convention, and you see the ESPN alert pop up, Nick Saban retired. And right away, I topped on the phone with our producer, Trey Yannity. He's like, hey, are you seeing this? I was like, yeah, let's get back to the studio and we'll get cranking. And it was like, hey, babe, I know I said that this was kind of it, but Nick Saban just retired. This is not going to happen ever again. Like, I will be back a little bit later. So, yeah, it kind of kickstarted a whole nother cycle for all of us.
So, JD, we kind of get every guest started here by telling them the same message, which is that we are very poor journalists outside of the world of Georgia football recruiting. So we do very little research on the people that we bring on. Now, I happen to know a little bit about your background in terms of playing career, which we will get into later. But I do want to talk about your road to On3, man. You know, like Jake said, man, you're the face of On3 video. I'm curious. How did this all come from? Where did you come from? Where does J.D. Pickell come from? And how do you end up here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't just say this to say it in a cliche way. Like, the Lord totally orchestrated everything for me when it came to what I'm doing now professionally. Didn't go to journalism school. Actually, I majored in hotel administration during my undergrad. So, like, I was taking tests on which hotel brands under which umbrella and changing beds and like things like that, because that was just like a flexible degree. I didn't know what I wanted to do post-grad, but to make a long story short, played my undergrad football at Cornell, had one more year of eligibility to use. And I was like, man, I'd love to go experience like the bigger time college football. Cause not to knock the Ivy League now, but I mean, you got like 500 plus people that show up there, and a lot of those are friends and family. So it wasn't exactly Athens State, you know, it wasn't exactly between the hedges. And so I was like, man, I'd love just to see what that's like and kind of try to experience that for one more year, you know, before we jump into whatever's next. And so I got a preferred walk-on to go play for Matt Rhule at Baylor. This was 2019. So they had just had a strong second year for him there in Waco, and it was kind of trending upward, and also had a lot of family at Baylor. So it made a lot of sense to be there, and did summer one, did summer two there. And then during fall camp, probably like practice four or five, or very, very early on, I got a concussion and had to medically retire. And every time I tell this story too, like I add one more practice day on there. So in a couple of years, it'll be like, yeah, man, I was starting halfway through the year, you know, had a bad injury, and I was leading the country in receiving too. And I had to, you know, had to hang them up. But that kind of was a little bit of a shock for me, because I kind of had this next year of my life planned out of what it was going to look like and what I was going to do. And, you know, to quote Cardale Jones, I didn't go to Baylor to play school, though I did have to go there to get, you know, into some graduate program, and figured out pretty early on that I didn't want to take on more student loans. And so that was pretty quick for me to be like, all right, no football. I pivoted away from school after that first semester of grad school, and was fortunate enough to where I had a conversation with Baylor's SID at the time during our picture day before I had to retire. He asked me what I wanted to do post-grad, and I said, I'd love to get into media. Don't know what that looks like. Don't know how I would do that, but I'd love to get into media. And he was kind enough to connect me with the Baylor fan site in Waco, Sikkim 365, to go do a post game for them and just try my hand at a couple of things, which I don't know if I was any good or not, but they kept inviting me back, and was fortunate enough from that to have the right people see the right things. And long story short, be able to get a job with On3. So I'm very, very grateful, very, very fortunate. And again, it was not something that was, by any stretch of the imagination, something that I, you know, drew up in the sand, but very grateful for how it worked out.
Man, that's a cool story. I do have to ask, though, we got to jump all the way back to the Ivy League stuff. What Ivy League schools did have a pretty good football following? I know Cornell, because you don't ever hear Cornell mentioned in like crazy rivalries, right? As far as Ivy League, but
yeah. Who is Cornell's rival?
So Columbia for us is like the other in-state school. Okay. You'd be surprised, man. Like a lot of those guys, like for, you have a lot of these kids that like just love football. You know, a lot of them understand they're not going to go play in the NFL. So like for those 10 Saturdays out of the year, like that is the NFL for them. So okay. They'll get after you pretty good. You know, Harvard and Yale, that game obviously always has a tremendous crowd, whether you're into the game or not, like both fan bases will show up. For us, our homecoming was always pretty solid, because Cornell actually has like the largest undergrad population in our conference, like 15,000. So you get the way that I looked at it as a recruiter, I was like, I'm already going to be a fish out of water going to this school. I have a higher percentage chance of meeting more people at a bigger school. And maybe there's more fish out of water too that got into this school with me. So that was kind of my approach in going there. But to answer your question, like homecoming, some of those schools for their rivalry games, they'll turn out. But besides that, man, you're like, you got to bring your own juice on that Saturday, man. When you're playing an 11 a.m. kick against Brown in Providence, Rhode Island, like you gotta bring it, man.
But you said, man, I imagine that, you know, everybody for that reason is just out there flying around. I mean, and just going hard, because like you said, that's your NFL, that's your chance. I mean, I bet nobody's holding any punches back.
No, man, the guys, they cut it loose. They cut it loose. And it's been fun, too, to see with the COVID year, the Ivy League, like, just said they punted on college football, which, I mean, you know, everyone has their own opinion on that. The benefit that came out of it, though, was you have a lot of guys that got another year developed and then went and used that extra year to go, you know, actually get a scholarship at a Power Four school. Like, I know Florida's got a guy from Penn. I had a couple teammates go to Duke and Penn State and have success and kind of keep the next level hopes alive, if you will. But yeah, for the most part, man, it's like, hey, you are very much so on the clock when you commit to a school like Cornell. You know that next step, you know, that next phase of your life probably doesn't have a whole lot of cleats and helmets involved. But yeah, it was a blast, a great experience, and a very, very pure form of college football still there too.
Well, let's take a look at what got JD Pickell at Brown. All right, Cornell. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that to you. But yeah, let's take a quick look, man. Because I'll be honest with you. I was in Indianapolis talking to Philip Dukes. We were sitting at the bar at the JW Marriott, and we were just talking. And he said, "Man, have you seen JD's highlights?" And I said, "No, man." He goes, "Man, they nice." That's what he said. So I had to.
Can you break these highlights down for us, please?
Oh gosh, I mean, we can do our best. I will say,
concussions. So I was gonna quiz you on what were the calls on these? Like, what was the play call in the huddle?
Hey, I mean, we ran the triple option, so there wasn't a whole lot of different calls to begin with. This one was just like, hey, return it where there's open space. Good job not catching the ball in the air by my guy here. Now, this was, I will say, this is not to knock Southern California public school football. This was not a skilled unit we were up against here, but we'll take a punt return touchdown anytime we can get it, boys. I was proud. This was our last game ever, or my last game ever playing high school football. That's modern day on the other side. Oh. I was always proud of this. That guy catching me, or a guy not catching me there.
He's pulling away.
We had a little bit of juice in the legs back then. We had a little bit of juice. I was surrounded by a lot of talent, man. Like, we had a couple of linemen go play, like, Pac-12, rest in peace to the Pac-12. Our quarterback probably could have gone somewhere big. We ended up going to Harvard. Yeah, this is throwing it back here.
I feel like what I'm watching is what Tim Dwight probably looked like in high school when if they had put him in the wing tee.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going back down the road here, man.
Legs move, man. Like, you are, I don't know, man. You can tell you're one of those guys you can look at on film and be like, man, this guy plays hard.
The stride length, man, what we were lacking in stride length, we made up for in motor. You know, I don't think I started stretching enough at that point in my life. We kind of elongated the stride in college. But, yeah, if nothing else, man, we tried hard.
Well, like
we tried
said,
hard. Yeah, this was
you're playing against them. I mean, awesome. And you guys are playing, you know, there's some great teams in this league. I mean, who were some of the big guys that you went against in this?
Yeah, so that's one thing I am extremely proud of. Like, from my playing career that I put in quotations, my athletic career, we played against some really talented guys, man. Like, in the playoffs, we played against Juju Smith-Schuster, Long Beach Poly. You notice there's not a lot of Long Beach Poly highlights on this on this tape to begin with. Played against Josh Rosen when he was at St. John Bosco, which was, you know, that's a name. It's a blast from the past. Gosh, who else? I'm trying to think who else we had. KJ Costello, who started at Stanford for a while, and then he kind of tore up LSU that one game. Gosh. Now, this was this squad right here that we're playing against, Corona Centennial, man, they had some guys. They had a running back, J.J. Taylor, who tore it up at Arizona, and I think he's still in the league right now. But let's see. I'm proud of this one here.
Oh, nice! Look at this guy.
I get a lot of flack in the on-3 office that I don't have the same motion that I used to. But, you know, I hope they see this, because now this is one too. This wasn't even a catch. It looked like a catch though, so we put it on there, cut it real quick before the ref can do this. Yeah, this is, so you'll notice a lot of the same play here, a lot of the pull pitch and the triple option. So, yeah, I mean, if I had more carries, I think Kirby would have given me a call. Is all I'm saying. You know, I slipped.
You look like the kind of guy that would willingly cover a kickoff. So I think, you know, those type guys have places to be in college football.
That is another thing that I will say. Like, the things that I'm most proud of, I kind of cut myself off there. Being first team all conference in this league and then leading our team in special teams tackles in college. Like, those two, I'm like, hey, I can lay my head on the pillow at night knowing, like, I did those two things and turn on this highlight tape once in a while. This is awesome.
I tell you what, I played some special teams in high school. I long snapped. Played both sides of the ball, played a little single A school. And I tell you what, man, the hardest I ever got hit, five hardest times I've ever been hit has been on special teams.
I'm kind of surprised it took them this long to dial back the kickoff with all the, you know, the way that the concussion's like a buzzword right now. But I'm like, man, there is something uniquely American about 11 grown men running full speed at each other.
Yeah.
With a head start, man. I'm like, that's football, right? I mean, I hope.
That is how you get well acquainted with the taste of your own blood. I mean, that's That may be the title of my my biography. Well acquainted with my own blood.
Man, that cover in itself is gonna jump off the bookshelf of Barnes and Noble. I already know it. That's gonna be
gonna look like that's
the one you gotta grab when you see it.
That Andrew WK album cover. JD, I'm curious, man. I'm gonna tell you, I don't know a lot of people that went to Cornell. I know it's an incredible school. My only exposure really to Cornell is Andy Bernard. And from The Office. And I'm curious, is that an accurate representation of the Cornell man? Because you don't come across like that, I got to tell you.
Yeah, you know, well, one, I appreciate that. That is a greater compliment than you know. two, unfortunately, that is a fairly accurate assessment of what a Cornell average undergrad male is like. Now, the thing for me, though, is like in that world, like all of us understand, we had no business going to school. Like we all had our admissions supported to get into school there. And so it is very, very obvious within a few minutes of your first class, like who had their admission supported, who plays a sport, and who has a solid test score GPA combo and maybe the wardrobe to match it when you
walk into your first class. Who belongs
And the teachers always know it too. And they, I mean, like, I remember multiple times, like everyone's either in like their Vineyard Vines or their Peter Millar, and I'm in there in like our team issued sweatshirt and sweats. And so when it comes time to cold call on somebody, she's calling on the fish out of water, and I'm like, listen, you and I both know I don't know the answer to this question. Like I am literally here trying to do my very best, but like please don't call on me in this lecture hall right now. I'm not trying to just embarrass myself in front of the Andy Bernards of this world.
Well, I'm sure you fit in great because like Andy Bernard, you are a very kind person. You're very, for those that don't know JD, you same dude you talk to on camera, you talk to off camera, same dude all the time. And the nicest guy ever, the most gracious human when it comes to asking you to be on or trying to link up with you to collaborate on something. So I definitely appreciate that about you. Let's talk about the college football season though.
Let's
so what's going to happen? You're the man that's supposed to tell us as on a national level, kind of what's supposed to happen. What do you see happening with this unprecedented? The SEC's different. The Big 10's different. The playoff, everything's changed.
I want to start it by just asking you this. Do you like it or do you hate it?
I hate that we had to change. I think we'll like where we end up at. Like, I think it's one of those things where going back isn't an option. And I would have been cool with the 14 playoff for the next 20 years. That would have been more than fine with me. I think like when we get to this 12 team playoff and we get to like December 20th and we have a bunch of games lined up and we're kind of breaking down the madness we're about to jump into, like that'll be a lot of fun. So in that sense, I'm okay with it, but I would have been more than fine with just keeping things as is because of the way the regular season is emphasized and because of the fact that every game means so much. Like, I think the crazy part is we're going to have upsets because college football is college football and that comes to the territory, but then we're going to have the dust settle on a Sunday and say, okay, well that means they're probably a 6 seed as opposed to a 4 seed or they're a 7 seed instead of a 5 seed. You know, like it's not going to change the entire postseason structure in terms of like, are they making the playoff or not making the playoff? So in that sense, I'm a little bit disappointed by it. Andy Staples says this a lot on his show, like the retraining of our brains that we're going to have to do of they lost. Yes, they lost 2 games. Yes, but they're still in the playoff. They're still one of the 12 best teams. So to answer your question, Jake, like I think I said this before, I think we're gonna have 5 SEC teams. I really do. I think there's going to be too many teams that finish in that 10-2 range to be left out. And then if when you get to the word everybody loves or the phrase everybody loves of eye test and resume and things like that, I think the SEC will just be superior to a 10-2 Big Ten team or to a 10-2 if it comes down to it, Notre Dame, where it's them or an SEC team. So I'm curious to see how many teams the Big Ten gets in. Penn State is fascinating to me. But I do think we get 5 SEC teams in.
That would be insane. I kind of liken what has happened with college football. College football is my child. And my child just took all of my favorite memorabilia and things in my office that I really love, and he took them outside and he burned them. And so it's like, yeah, I'm really angry, and I don't really like this a whole lot, but there's nothing you can do to make me stop loving you.
I love that comparison.
Yeah,
I love. I mean, so how long do you stay mad for? How long do you stay mad for? Because I am about to have a baby girl in November, and I can kind of gauge that sort of emotion based on being the kid that burned the stuff. But now, if my baby girl goes and throws, you know, I mean, my one or two pieces of memorabilia that I have into a fire and be like, hey, this might take me a week or a couple days. Like, how long do you stay mad is, I guess, the question here.
See, here's the difference. With if it was the girl, it's one third as long as I'm going to be mad at the boy. Okay. Like, so probably him, like a couple of hours, her probably, you know, 20 minutes, maybe. Okay. You know, 30 at, you know, somewhere in there. Like, yeah, you can't be mad at little girls. Okay. They're just too cool. They're awesome. But the boys, you know, they're just, I don't know. There's a mischievousness about a boy that you're sitting there thinking, you've been plotting this. Like, this is burned my shit in the first degree is what it is.
There's, you know, also, like, you're also seeing yourself reflected there, Jake. That's part of it.
That's too. Probably you're, it.
I was you once.
You've been planning this. You've had this on your mind, buddy.
You said the retrain thing, JD, and that's such a good word for it. Like, I'm still adjusting personally to calling USC a Big Ten team. Like, that is like totally fried my brain. Yeah. I mean, I'm just scrambled by that.
It's bizarre. I remember like watching USC and Penn State in the Rose Bowl, and now we're going to see them in a conference game, like in the Coliseum. I believe it's like early November. And I'm like, I'm with you. That's a conference game. Like, how are we, Ohio State, Oregon, and Autzen? That's a conference game. Like, that used to be like the gift we would get in the middle of the season from the non-conference schedule. And now it's going to be like who does Oregon have in the Big Ten this year? Who does USC have in the Big Ten this year?
By the way, I just want to say, I cannot, that is the one game all college football season, Georgia or not, I cannot wait to watch.
It's going to be
so Ohio State at Oregon. That is the number one game I'm excited for this season.
And we might get it twice. I mean, heck, we could get it three times with no more divisions. Like, and that's maybe takes a little bit of the shine off of it, but when they meet up in Autzen, I love that it's in Autzen too, that Ohio State's going out to the West Coast and it's going to be, you know, Oregon's chance to really, you know, as a fan base, kind of make a statement that, hey, we're here, we're in the Big Ten. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
This goes along with the retraining of the mind. Like, you know, I'm not a huge NFL guy. I watch NFL every Sunday, a little bit here and there. I'm a Broncos fan, but I don't really have, like, you know, I don't really want to get NFL Sunday ticket anymore. So I just kind of keep up with their score and work and all that stuff. But one of the things I do love about the NFL, I love the playoffs because the playoffs are a lot of fun. And it's always cool when they intro and there's so much recent bad blood or history between those two teams that I really do believe that's going to become something that, you know, on the front end, we're thinking, oh, man, we might see them play three times. And like you mentioned, take the shine off of it, so to speak. But I think once we get there and we start experiencing those things, I think we're going to be like, man, this is actually okay. This is pretty cool.
And I think in the SEC, we might even see a little bit more of that because, like, I feel like Texas and OU in my mind have been in the SEC for the last couple of years just because that was a storyline since it broke at Media Days, what, 2-3 years ago now, that they're coming to the conference. And then so for the better part of that lead up, it's like, well, is Texas ready for the SEC? And then Texas plays Bama close one year, they beat them the next year. And so like that lead up to me, they're like that engaged couple that in your mind, they've already been married because they've been engaged so long. Like I don't have as much trouble retraining my brain with those schools, but in the Big Ten, I'm like, oh yeah, Washington in the Big Ten. Oh yeah, UCLA, they're in the Big Ten too. Okay, like that's going to take me a second, but Texas and OU, man, them to the SEC, to me, now that we've had a while to calibrate, that fits really nicely. That's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm curious, JD, you know, we ask when we get the national voices on here, your view on Georgia, just as it stands today, what do you think about the Dogs, what they're doing? What are your expectations for them this season?
We get people on our show thinking I'm like a Georgia fan. Like this guy's a homer, man. I'm like, well, I grew up in Southern California. So not so much. And I wouldn't say I'm a homer in that sense. I do have family in Atlanta. If that makes me a homer, then so be it. But I mean, I think they're the best team in America. I think what separates them The roster is one thing. Like, the roster probably puts them in a different category, and you talk about them in Ohio State, and you probably throw Texas in the mix there, depending on how you feel about their portal pieces. But to me, it's the experience factor. Like, when Carson Beck walks out there for the SEC title game this upcoming season, it won't be his first time. When he walks out there for a college football playoff game, like, he will have been able to see that as a backup. Heck, he got snaps in the national title game when they were beating the brakes off TCU. It feels like everybody at Georgia did. And so I think the experience factor for a guy like him and other pieces on this roster, we saw it last year with Michigan. Like, J.J. McCarthy looked horrible against TCU in that playoff game. And I think he learned from it, gathered himself, and had a much better showing in this most recent playoff run, and they were national champs. So I don't want to distill it down and make it sound like that's the only thing that matters and that's why I'm high on Georgia. But to me, like, that is a major differentiating factor to go with the fact that that roster is stocked with as good, if not the best talent in all of college football.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. And obviously we got to get through, you know, preseason camp before we know what Georgia is really going to look like. But, that's the way the roster has been built. And anytime you got the best quarterback, I think, in college football coming back, at least somebody that's in discussion, the three-man discussion there, you've got a really good chance, especially when you've got Georgia's roster. Jenny, we end every show we end every interview with our guests by the same two questions. And mine is a little bit of a Debbie Downer, but honestly, I feel like it's got it has potential if people take it the right way. Let's say you've passed away and you get to organize your own funeral. You get to kind of pick who eulogizes you and who sends you home. Dead or alive, who would you pick?
So I've watched a few of y'all's Bark After Darks anyway, and I thought about this when I've heard y'all ask it to other people. And it's hard to land on just one. My gut reaction, who's the guy who does the all the big cards when it comes to, like, UFC? What's his name? Is it Bruce Buffett? Bruce Buffer?
Yeah.
That might be one way to go. Like, that kind of gets the room going a little bit. That kind of gets the juices flowing a little bit. It's like, okay, you know what? Like, and at 5'11", it's like, yep, that was him. He was five. I just yelled into the mic, so I hope it didn't mess with the audio for the folks who are listening. But I think that would be a heck of a way to go. Him or, like, a Morgan Freeman eulogy, like, depending on which kind of chord you want to strike. I think those are that's my lineup right there.
I like it. I like anybody who does the research for this show, because, like, I admit, we don't do very much on our end. So
I think now that we know that JD listens, we could say we've got like 45 listeners now.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. JD Pickell, probably our second most famous fan next to Rusty Mansell's mom. So that's great.
Yeah.
Really excited. That's elite company y'all just threw me in. I appreciate that.
JD, my question, you probably know what's coming then if you've seen it. You've traveled a lot. You're a guy, like you said, you've been on the West Coast. You spent time in Ithaca, New York. You're in Nashville right now. You've been all over the place, brother. What is the worst hotel room that JD Pickell has ever stayed in his life?
The worst hotel room I've ever stayed in was a motel. And I want to say it was, like, not in Las Vegas, but it was, like, I think on the outskirts of, like, Nevada. We were there for, I want to say, like, a Pop Warner football game. And, I mean, it was, like, bed was hard, carpet was scratchy. I forget if the AC worked or not, but, like, that hotel room, I just remember, like, going to bed and being like, man, I don't know. If we're all staying in the same hotel, I do not know how we're going to play tomorrow, boys. Like, this is going to be something else. So that was, it was Havasu, Lake Havasu. So I guess that's probably like somewhere else in California, not Nevada. But yeah, it was a bad hotel stay. We won the game. The boys, I think, you know, were able to overcome the adversity. But that was a brutal hotel stay in the Pop Warner days.
We don't get a lot of Pop Warner answers there. So I know that one had to be traumatic. If you can go all the way back on that,
it'll stick with you. Awesome. That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, JD, we really appreciate your time today, buddy. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been great. We definitely want to do this again. We encourage everybody to get over to the On3 page on YouTube. Follow JD's work. Like you said, he's a Georgia fan. The people tell him that all the time. He's
What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do?
Thank
the
you
SEC
so much,
bias man. From the Southern California folks, man. Right. What are you going to do? But hey, I appreciate having y'all, man. This is, I love what y'all do here, and I love Dogs HQ, obviously, but this show is just so fun, and really appreciate y'all having me on, man. This is a blast.
We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you, man. All right. JD Pickell in the house today. A great guest. A great guest. Great story, man. Just you got to love that, man. Go from hotel management to the voice of college sports on On3. That's incredible.
Yeah. So, hey, I got to ask you, could you have survived at an Ivy League school, you think?
Survived? I don't know. I doubt it. Probably not. You know, the only thing that makes me think possibly, and I'll say this, one of the hardest things for me about going to Georgia was that I came from a small high school, right? And so, not as small as yours, but a relatively small high school. And so when I got to Athens, man, I felt like such a huge fish out of water, like JD was saying. Like, I was so used to knowing everybody and kind of like knowing my teachers and knowing my classmates and stuff like that, that it was a really, really tough adjustment. And it made my first year incredibly hard. Basically, it made my first couple of years very, very hard, in fact, until I kind of figured out a groove with it. And so that's the only thing that makes me think maybe I could have. It would have been like that would have been an atmosphere that I would have been more likely to thrive in, possibly. I was not smart enough to do it, but I was a pretty good actor, so I might have been able to pull it off from that perspective.
Yeah. I'll think about it sometimes because I've always been kind of book smart. Like I've always been able to kind of, if you teach it to me, I can do it, you know? And that was one of the reasons why I always kind of liked math. It was kind of like, hey, if you work at it now, I'll be the first to tell you, somebody who taught math at the high school level, if you don't lose it, you use it, you lose it. You know, just like the little scene there in 40-Year-Old Virgin, except we're talking about something else.
Sure.
That's the way it is. But like, I mean, I think about sometimes like being in those classrooms and I don't know. Cause my wife has a couple of cousins, Lisa and Katie, they're the best. They are two of the most awesome human beings you'll ever meet. They're love spending Thanksgiving with them. We were, Zion with them last year. They're Harvard graduates. And one of them went to Berkeley for post-grad and the other one went to Harvard for graduate school. And from what, I mean, they flew right through. They didn't need 7 years like I did. Like they knocked it out. And, you know, like, I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm like, God, that's got to be difficult. Like these are girls scored like perfect on their SATs. Like but then again, I've always been kind of the person who's like, I think I could do it.
The one thing that I've always wondered, and we maybe should have asked JD this, but I don't know that he would have known because, like he said, he it wasn't exactly like the natural path for him either. I've always been like the thing you've always heard, or at least that I've always heard, is that getting in is the hard part. Like if you can get there, then you'd probably be all right. But you get the competition to get there is what is difficult. And from that perspective, I wonder, you know, how much different would it be? I mean, I think it would have been a really amazing experience. It would have been cool. I think you would have met some really interesting, probably esoteric people.
A lot of people make fun of the way we sound, especially me.
No question. No question about that. I mean, we would have, that would have definitely been a big piece of it. Although, to some degree, depending on where you've ever been, I mean, like, some people dig it, man. Like, some people are into it, you know?
Yeah, you might be able to do pretty well with the ladies.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Absolutely.
Oh, I wish I could have seen Roos's face. It was that old devilish Jake Roos. That's what I'm saying, you know?
I mean, you could have, and who knows? Look, I mean, you're not, there's probably not a lot of oil tycoon daughters going to, public schools. And in general, they're going, the elites are going to the elite schools. So you might have hooked up with some girl from Johnson & Johnson family.
Could become the next Tom Wamsgams.
You ride that thing all the way to a
man. Right out of succession, brother. You stare out of succession, become the next Tom Wamsgams.
I would have been a great house husband. That's what I would say about it.
what about heir to a multimedia conglomerate, you know?
Yeah, sure. Easily. No question. I feel like a lot of what that is just like going out and schmoozing, and I'm pretty decent.
I could have drunk too much really expensive champagne and gave people that looked at me the wrong way a hug. You know,
sure, of course.
You know, like JQ embarrassed us last night. Hey, I hugged everybody. I was kind.
Sure. But there's also a chance that I, you know, Ted Kennedy somebody and drop a car into Chappaquiddick. So, I mean, it's not, we can't get anything. We can't rule anything out. There's equal chances of those storylines.
Oh my God. Oh Jesus. Or just they find you dead in a rock quarry somewhere. Right. You know, just find you just dead in a rock quarry. He's floating. We don't even know why. Most of these things sink.
All right. Look, hey, this leads perfectly into my question tonight.
And hey, I'll be honest with you. I had changed mine while we were talking about college.
Okay, all right. Well, it's time for Jaking Off in case you didn't realize it. So cover your eyes if you're averse. I would say my question tonight, and it leads pretty well into what we were just discussing to some degree. I am curious, Jake Rowe. I know your feelings in terms of, and this is not necessarily a political question. It's not a, I'm not talking about what.
Yeah, I've been waiting on you to ask me about Israel and all that stuff, Palestine, for a while.
Will you denounce on air? No, I'm kidding. I do want to know though, where, if you were going to run for public office. And you can't say nothing. If you were going to run for something public office related, what would you run for? What would be a thing that Jake Rowe could maybe throw his weight behind politically and maybe feel like you could get some good stuff done?
Okay, assuming you're giving me a toolbox that kind of to surround myself and actually have a shot at it, you know, like assuming like,
if
I wanted to be president, you're just installing me with the necessary qualifications to make all that happen.
I'm suggesting that we can start as low level as you want to go, or
right.
So yeah,
but whatever it is, the office I'm getting elected to, I'm qualified to run for.
I would say so. And so in that regard, I would say that you could probably keep it as low as probably like a state house position. Probably more realistically, like county government.
I was thinking mayor.
Okay.
Yeah. I would want to run. I mean, like I would love to be a city mayor, like a small city mayor.
Pearson, the mayor of Pearson.
No. I saw a small city. I didn't say tiny village. I didn't say like a tiny little town, which would be fine. That would be cool too. But I think, you know, like a, you know, somewhere with, you know, 250 to 500,000 people, maybe.
Wow.
Like a kind of a smallish, like I guess technically a metropolitan statistical area.
Yeah.
But you know, I would love to be like the mayor of Athens. And I tell you why. Years ago, I can't remember her name. She was an older lady and she had won. She was the mayor in Athens. And it was years and years back whenever I was teaching high school. I cannot remember her name.
I think it was Kathy. No, was it Kathy?
No. I can't remember who it is, but we met her. I was teaching at Cedar Shoals at the time, and a coworker and I ran into her in the parking lot, and we walked her around where she needed to be because she was doing like a little get together with parents from the different high schools and stuff, and just kind of hearing them out and talking about the issues.
Nancy Denson.
That's it, Nancy Denson.
Yep.
And we walked with her, and she was, She was the most down to earth. It was a really enriching talk. I felt like she knew a lot about what she was talking about. And she was kind of telling us a couple old stories, about a 10, 15 minute walk. And I don't know, man, after talking to her, I was kind of like, you know, I would want to be a mayor because I would want to like have that kind of conversation, those kind of conversations with people in a town, in a city. I kind of want to talk to everybody, and I don't want everybody knowing me and being pissed off with me 1 minute and then not the next, just over personal issues. I don't want to be like the mayor of Pearson, you know, just hypothetically speaking here, there's nothing true about it, but like, you know, so-and-so could have ran a stop sign. And the mayor's nephew could run a stop sign and T-bone a big family's, you know, grandkid and break their leg or something. And then the next thing you know, they're all mad at the mayor for that.
Right.
Not over the mayor doing their job, you know? So
right.
I wouldn't want to be in that tight of an environment, but I'd love to be a mayor. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think you would do really well at that. I asked because I'm doing a little political thing. I'm not going to reveal all the details of that, but it's very low level stuff. It's nothing. It's super small, right? I mean, so like it's like local level, and it's weird because I worry about those same things. Like, you know, people being mad at you and people, you know, being angry at you. And I know that that's just part of the job. That's part of the gig, but it's going to be an interesting experience. I think if it comes to fruition, I've been doing some stuff. I work on the planning commission in our city, and you know, I mean, there's only 400 residents in the town. We're really, really small here, but you know, I think that I'm interested that you said that. That's a kind of a surprising answer from you, because I feel like I figured you'd just be like, I don't know, man, whatever the least thing is, because I hate this stuff. You don't seem to like it very much.
I don't really like it a whole lot, but I think, like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, especially if you don't get so big, but you get like big enough that like you can deal with a bunch of people and maybe positively change a bunch of lives if you do some of the things the right way and treat people the right way. You don't get up to that level where kind of there's a lot of corruption necessarily, right, and a lot of political aspirations. Nobody that's the mayor of Douglas, Georgia, or Waycross is talking about being. Nobody's going to be in the Senate. You know, right, like that's just got one out of a thousand.
Waycross guy might have a shot. That's a decent sized town.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Waycross? How many people are in Waycross?
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to look that up. I thought. Wait, now I've never been to Waycross, so there's about 14,000 people. Okay, that's not huge.
That's a decent
sized little town, though.
Yeah, I amend my statement. Nothing over 100,000.
All right, that's where I was like, you're getting ambitious with this, man.
Yeah, I get thinking about it. I don't know if I'd want to be the mayor of a town as big as, like, how many people does Savannah have?
I see. Like, what came to my mind was Macon.
Yeah, dude, I'm sitting here talking about a place twice as big as Macon. I've lost my mind.
Yeah, Macon's 153,000.
I mean, not Macon, Savannah. Savannah's 148,000 people.
Yeah, never mind. Twice as big as Macon or Savannah.
Yeah, about Athens or Albany size is what
I'm thinking.
You know, like two very similar places.
I think you should think about it, man. I think you.
I know, man. I'm not doing it. You know what kind of stuff they're going to dig up on me?
Sure.
I dig up the time I shot a paint can, aerosol paint can, beside the house, and it sprayed all over the house. And thought my mom was going to kill me.
Yeah, I bet.
Shot it with a BB gun. All right. So while we were talking about kind of the fish out of water thing, I remembered the first time I went to one of my first classes at UGA was just lecture hall biology. Right. I mean, you probably took it to 1103 or something like that, or 1303 or something.
I had to drop that class, actually. But yes.
Yeah, it was one of the four C's I made in college. Yeah. I made one, you know, pretty much every year, and it was always during the fall. But I hated biology. I just couldn't get into it. But we worked in pods. Like, it was a 300 person class, but you had like a pod of like six people.
Your breakout. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't really have a breakout. We just, if we did, like, they grouped us together so that we would, like, study with people if we needed to or whatever. But we also had a couple of, like, group projects we did. So that was kind of cool. But I remember meeting somebody in my group. I remember his name. I'm not going to say it because he might even be a listener. And God, this was so funny. But it's what led me to my question, so I'll get there. But something came up, and I don't know where you came from that mooning people was a thing.
Okay.
But it was where I came from. You know, right time of night, you know, you drive downtown, you just, somebody's ass just hanging out the window. You know, sure. I mean, it's just people do stuff like that. Just,
hey, man, not a lot to do in small towns. I get
easily amused, you know, easily amused we were.
Go throw bricks at road signs or show your ass, show your ass out a window.
Yeah. But something happened, and I was telling this guy about something, and I was like, yeah, you know, and he just mooned him. And he goes, what do you mean mooned him? He said, I've heard you say that like a couple times now. First of all, I didn't know I was saying mooned all the time. But anyway, he goes, I said, you've never mooned anybody? He goes, I've never even heard that before. And I started asking other people in the group, and like only one other person in the group who happened to come from Macon knew what it was. So it cracked me up just kind of how the difference, and I don't know, it seems like something that everybody should know. So I wanted to ask you, when was the last time you were a party to or participated in a mooning?
Oh man, that's an interesting question. That's been a long, long time, Jake. Thankfully, I mean, I feel like that speaks well to my level of maturity in my life.
Your couth.
Yeah. I guess the old boys learned something. I don't know, man. I would say it was probably back in college, probably those early days, like, you know, freshman. My freshman haul was pretty, we were pretty mischievous. You know, we did a lot of goofy stuff in the freshman hall dorms. I lived in Creswell Hall. We were 2C. That was our that was like our gang symbol we had was 2C. And it was you know, just a menagerie of people, but it was a lot more like the Atlanta and the suburb kids, and then you sprinkled in a few of the country guys.
That is college.
Yeah, sure. Especially in Georgia, right? I mean, it's
primarily city boys with a few college boys. But as far as the guy population,
heavily metro area, and then you sprinkled in a few of us hayseeds. And so I would say probably sometime around that era was a good time for it. We stuff like that was just occurring regularly, and it was just like a normal part of your day. Like, you know, like you'd just be walking around and you'd oh hey, there's Dave's ass, like, you know. And then you just keep, you know, all right, cool, we want to go grab a bagel down at O House or something. I mean, like, it was just like it became part of it to some degree. It was a lot like a locker room, right? I mean, it was just it was just one gigantic locker room. And, you know, God bless the girls who came and visited us. And I remember one specific instance. There was this guy down at the end of the hall, and he was getting after it, man. And so like all of a sudden, it's like when those meerkats in Africa, when they all start popping their heads out, and it's like the doors start opening and everybody like starts popping their heads out. And like we all just opened our doors and we basically just started all hanging out. This is all still going on, and it all got done. And they came out, and the whole hall erupted in applause.
That's funny. That's a good one, man. That is a funny one for sure. Yeah. So. Yeah, one of the reasons, going back to what you said about like kind of the, you know, Metro Atlanta kids with a few country guys sprinkled in, is like anytime I meet a Georgia graduate, like I met one in the I met one at the Delta Sky Club on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day whenever I flew out to Miami. And thank God I did, because the whole airport went bananas that next morning. But I met a guy who was a Georgia graduate, and he was from like Dunwoody or something like that. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm from South Georgia. I, you know, went to Georgia too. And he goes, yeah, I had a couple buddies. And I was like, man, you are like, it is like 90% of the Georgia grads you run into are like, yeah, I've got a buddy from, you know, they ran it in college at some point with somebody from, you know, Fitzgerald or, you know, Cochran or somewhere, Thomaston, you know, somewhere down in central South rural Georgia. And he's like, yeah, man, that guy was wild. Or yeah, man, that guy's.
And yeah. I was going to say, you kind of cut me off at the pass there, but that was what I was going to say, is like, they like those people because the hayseeds like us are the crazy people. We're the, yeah, like, you know, like they just kind of grew up, you know, in their gated communities, and, you know, they would go, I don't know, have a house party on Friday and, you know, do whatever suburban kids did. Whereas we just had to like create our own fun all the time. Right. And so we were, you know, I think that they appreciated that to some degree. People thought that it was wild. Like when my friends from home would come to visit, like they're like, my friends in college would be like, dude, these people are crazy. Like, what is going on where you're from? And I was just like, I don't know, man. It's just like how we live. Like, this is just what we do. And so I get how that can happen for sure. Like those people, I think they gravitate toward it because it's so unnatural and so foreign to what they're used to.
Yeah. It's, and I have no doubt there's probably also kind of a reaction to new stimuli going on, you know, for those of us that are, you know, like that. So, yeah, I mean, It was fun, man. It's been nice to think back about some of the silly times in college. Becoming a dad wasn't the highlight at that age. But I do love my 17-year-old. She's great. But anyway, all right. We've tell you this every time. We don't know what's coming this next week. I got JD nailed down on Friday. I honestly, Jake, we didn't get a chance to talk about our guests behind their backs, like whenever they leave, like we normally do, but I feel like JD, I don't know, he put himself in the conversation to be one of our better guests we've ever had.
I thought so too. I appreciated that he had done his research before he came on to Bark After Dark. So he knew what was going on. Sometimes I wonder if we catch people off guard with the way that we approach this thing. I hope not. But even still, those have always been fun too. So,
yeah. Well, I'm going to go take care of the 900 things that have cropped up and it's probably been distracting me while I've been trying to do this. Sure. So I'm going to go do that. Everybody else, enjoy your days. And we love you. We appreciate you.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.